As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. Adam Crafton with us as usual. After the last couple of weeks has been all about managerial dismissals, today's pod is focused on their replacement. So we'll hear about the bond between Steven Gerrard and Christian Perslow that played a part in Gerrard landing the Aston Villa job. We'll look at how Newcastle could be about to be given a new identity by Eddie Howe. So the Athletic's George Culkin will join us for that. And Michael Bailey will be with us to tell us why Norwich City have decided to go for Dean Smith as their new manager. Let's start the pod then by discussing the task at hand for Newcastle for Eddie Howe. The Athletic's George Culkin is with us. Before we deal with Eddie Howe, the club seemed very keen to get his training sessions or parts of his training session out on social media. What's the thinking behind that, do you think?
It just makes the change to have a training session during International Week. I think that's probably their thinking.
I was trying to get at, are they immediately trying to show the contrast, whatever was said behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think there's probably a bit of that. You know, I was being facetious there. The bigger picture at the moment is the smaller picture, if that makes sense, because Newcastle have got nothing else apart from the next nine games. That's the only thing that they can really think about. I mean, it's one of the sort of fascinating things about the takeover is about how rich it theoretically makes them. And, you know, they're talking about winning something within 5 or 10 years. They can't win a single game of football, you know. And so somehow they've got to join those dots together. And the most important thing they have are these nine games, starting with Brentford at the weekend. They've got to find a way of winning, and they've got to find a way of not being adrift by the time January comes around, which is, you know, when they can make a different sort of impact. So I think it is that focus on the training ground and what's being done there, because, you know, there is, as I say, there's nothing else at the moment.
For those of us that don't go on social media cesspits, what are these training sessions showing?
Well, I think they're showing from day one, they sort of showed that he was sort of saying, no, that's not good enough. I want you to run more, that, you know, jogging is no good to me, all this sort of stuff. And so there is a sense of that kind of impetus, which is good. One thing he talked about last week, again, was about an identity. You know, there's great sort of context and mitigation around Newcastle over the last couple of years, from the pandemic to the fact that the takeover sort of been hanging over everything. One thing they've not been able to do is kind of stand for anything at all on the pitch, apart from Steve Bruce talked about ticking along, keeping them up. They bounced between formations and systems, sticking with something until they lost, which they would, and then doing something else. That's part of it too. Eddie Howe talked about having an identity. You know, there's only one way that you can do that, and that's by honing things on the training pitch. So there's been a sense of quickening around the place. Just one of the very quick thing about that, there's been so much uncertainty around the club. And again, that's not Steve Bruce's fault. I always remember something Lee Cattermole said to me once, and he was talking about the turmoil at Sunderland, but he said, as a footballer, the thing you want more than anything else is certainty. You know, you want to know where you're playing in the team. You want to know that the bloke standing next to you knows what he's doing. You want to feel that the manager knows what he's doing, so on and so on and so forth. And there's been none of that at Newcastle over the last 2 years. And so finally they have somebody there with new owners. And, you know, I think that's very important.
Adam?
I think George is right. And I think that's probably true of most people, isn't it? In whatever career they do, that they just want certainty and to trust people that, you know, they're working with and things like that. I think also it does, the fact that certainty is there also puts a little bit more pressure on the Newcastle players, because I think it's probably been quite useful for them. You know, I think a few of them in particular have really underperformed at the start of the season as well. And the fact that this is now all resolved, the manager's there, you know, you've got a manager who's, you know, he's clearly a talented coach who's, you know, he's not Steve Bruce, the man that everyone's decided wasn't up to it. So I think now there is a, you know, a bit more pressure on the players. So, well, if you don't turn up in the next 9 games, then maybe you're just not as good as, you know, you were hoping, you know, you were hoping to be known as. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how the players deal with that. I think also there must be a sense among the players, like, we want to be the ones that hang on to this project. You know, as this club gets bigger and spends more and invests and is ambitious, can I be Newcastle's Pablo Zabaleta? Can I be, you know, what Nigel de Jong or, you know, Vincent Kompany, who started out as a holding midfielder at City and becomes the greatest centre-half? I'm not going to say Isaac Hayden's going to become Vincent Kompany, but I'm sure there's probably, you know, 3 or 4 members of that Newcastle squad who, if they apply themselves in the right way, could really go on a journey over the next 5 or 6 years with the club. But equally, I mean, if they don't get results in the next 5 or 6 games, then I struggle to see them staying up, really.
As his methods and as more profile pieces are done on him and stuff that we know about, you know, him during his time off using it to study Simeone and this, that and the other, as more of that has come out, has that changed the fan base's reaction to him?
I think there's been a sort of overwhelmingly positive reaction to him anyway, really. Whether that would have been the case 2 or 3 months ago, I'm not sure. But I think there's just been this, you know, people have obviously been waiting for the takeover, but then there's been this wait for sort of anything to sort of happen beyond that. I mean, you know, for there to be that dividend of a new manager or new players and or results. And it's been, everything has taken so long that hasn't happened yet. You used the word contrast at the start. I think seeing someone come in who is sort of young and hungry and is very much a coaching manager, head coach in that sense, has been good and has been welcomed. There's been that sort of sense of detail which has been lacking over the last kind of couple of years. But, you know, we'll have to see how it turns out on the pitch. That's the big thing.
Can his modern methods, George, work within an infrastructure that we have been constantly told is archaic?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, one of the nice, very nice answers that he gave last week, he was asked about the training ground, which was, I mean, I wouldn't say has been untouched over 14 years, but certainly in terms of being modern and in terms of other Premier League clubs. I remember speaking to Rafa Benitez, who sort of said that when he arrived at the club, he was shown architect plans and he talked to the architect. And by the time he left, they'd given it a coat of paint. And I spoke to a Newcastle player last season who said that you have to sort of work your rehab classes around Zumba classes at the local David Lloyd gym. Now, the club denied that at the time, but it's not a built-for-purpose training ground. But the thing that Eddie Howe said was, when I started off at Bournemouth, I didn't have any of that. Those conversations will have to wait a little bit. You know, he's got 9 games when he has to do something on the you know, he has to coach. That's all he can do for those 9 games. Those conversations about training ground and stuff will have to wait a little bit.
Some people have forgotten how highly rated Eddie Howe has been at different points over the last decade. When Liverpool were in the process of hiring Klopp, the other two people they spoke to, Ancelotti and Eddie Howe, I mean, that's how, you know, that is how highly regarded he's been. I think the other thing is really interesting in terms of when you watch Newcastle this season, George will know best than me, that they rarely have looked like the fittest team on the pitch. They usually don't look as fit as their opponents. One of the things, in one of those sort of highly detailed, nerdy athletic pieces we did last year, where it became really interesting was when you have managers who go in pre-season, and this happened, for example, when Solskjaer came into Man United, and the statistics around Mourinho's sprints and distances covered were really, really low. And for the first 8 or 9 weeks, Solskjaer and his staff basically just ran the team into the ground, and they had an instant bounce. But then they picked up a load of injuries. And this is a pattern that's actually really well known amongst the sort of strength and conditioning coaches, that when a manager comes in with different tactics that ask different things, both in training and in games, injury prevention becomes really, really difficult, to the extent that, like, there's some strength and conditioning coaches who are now consulted by boards as part of the process of hiring a manager, because they're saying, look, we need to take a view on, could this lead to the squad being injured? Do we need to look at that in the transfer market, that kind of thing as well? So I'm not saying that's going to happen with Eddie Howe, but it's definitely a challenge that they're going to have to factor in as to how do you make a squad fitter in a way that they can compete better, but also in a way that we don't lose players along the way.
The other thing in all of this, moving aside from the training, and you know, let's go to the transfer window in January. You know, Eddie Howe is often criticised, and we've had these discussions before, for his record in the transfer market in certain circumstances. People throw Jordan Ibe at him, they'll throw Dominic Solanke at him. I wonder whether you both think, and George, go first, what might be more relevant at the moment is he was actually quite good at getting players. Jack Wilshere is the prime example of someone who we got on loan to Bournemouth. So if Newcastle are really going to exploit the loan market this January, which former pros tell me is the way that they're going to have to do it so that they don't get mercenaries, basically, then actually Eddie Howe's probably a good fit for that, isn't he?
It's a very good point. I would say that Steve Bruce was excellent at that all the way through his career, because in management, because he's always had very good relationships with other managers. And so the point at Newcastle is that they weren't able to do those deals. They weren't able to do the deals that he wanted at the back end of the last window, the summer window, with people like Choudhury at Leicester. And I think that's the biggest challenge moving forward, actually, is that it took them a couple of weeks to get rid of Steve Bruce. It's then, you know, they referred to the process of bringing in a new manager as very thorough and detailed. And I know it was. They talked to sort of 20 people by the end of it. That won't work when it gets to January. It just will not work because, you know, one of the huge criticisms of the Ashley era, particularly when Benitez was there, was that he would put the framework of deals in place, whether it was loans or permanent transfers, he would press the button and then nothing would happen because there was this logjam between him, Lee Charnley and Mike Ashley. You know, his frustration at the sort of glacial pace that they did business was a real problem. Now, Newcastle have been doing their due diligence, they would describe it as, but whilst they've been doing that, games have slipped by and they're games that they haven't won. They can't do that in January. Everything cannot be going back to Saudi Arabia for sign-off in January, because they'll miss targets. So I think that's the sort of crucial thing, really, moving forward. By the time they get to January, they have to be ready to move quickly. Otherwise, they're in massive trouble.
Because it's also, we talk about these 9 games, don't we? And there's a danger if that transfer business isn't done quickly, that 9 games basically becomes 12 games before you've got the players in. And that's just looking at Newcastle's fixtures in January, Southampton away, Watford at home, Leeds away. They are 3 games that, you know, if they get their players in early, could make a real difference to whether they stay up or not. I think it's also really interesting. There's been a lot of reports about, you know, apparently some sort of agreement between different Premier League clubs not to sell to Newcastle and things like that. If that happens, I will come back on this podcast and, you know, say that I've been wrong. But I would be staggered if clubs who are desperate to offload players, release funds from their wage bill, are saying no when, you know, a load of money comes along in the January transfer window. I think that, to me, feels like, you know, clubs trying to sort of make a bit of noise around it at the moment.
Yeah, self-interest rules. I mean, I've kind of read those stories and they're very interesting, but no, exactly. As you say, when there's money put in front of you and you need that money, it would be very unfootball-like for clubs to step away saying, oh, no, thank you, we won't do business with you. It just isn't the way that footballers work.
All it would actually do is push Newcastle away from players on very, very high wages who some might consider to be mercenaries at those big clubs, you know, like Chelsea or Man United or Arsenal, into possibly smarter moves by raiding France or Germany or Spain or whatever anyway. So, I mean, it doesn't seem highly thought through.
Just before we do our weekly chat with our Norwich writer in a car park somewhere in Norfolk, will there be movement on a director of football before January?
Well, I mean, I've sort of read lots of reports talking about Michael Emiliano, who was at Chelsea, of course. I don't know about that. I know that he's someone that they've talked about internally. I was also told last week that they thought they were still really at the beginning of that process. But that's one of the most intriguing things, because if they bought Newcastle as a complete clean slate, then you would theoretically want to have your technical director or sporting director or director of football in place before you appoint a manager. And because, you know, those relationships are absolutely pivotal at a club. So whether there's someone there before January, I don't know. That may very well be an aspiration of theirs. But yeah, who will take those decisions? Who does the negotiations with the other clubs? At the moment, Lee Charnley is still there. He was managing director under Mike Ashley and was the only director at the club. And he's still there sort of during the transition process. I don't know how long he'll be there for. So yeah, that's another big question. I don't have the answer to that. I'm sorry.
And we'd also normally have, I mean, in the same way as, you know, the technical director or sporting director would normally be there before the head coach, the chief executive would normally be there before the sporting director or technical director. So they're having to do it. I understand why they're having to do it back to front because of the precarity of the situation. But it is interesting. If you get someone who Eddie Howe knows really well, it means that maybe the head coach under a sporting director model has too much power. Equally, if you get someone that he doesn't know and he sees as a bit of a threat, then straight away you have politics and tension. So it's a really difficult one, I think, for them to get right in a very, very short time frame. Evan Arlo would be good, though.
Right, time to go to a car park somewhere in Norfolk. Thanks, George.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So as we've alluded to then, it has been a regular feature over the last few weeks where we talk to The Athletic's Michael Bailey in a car park somewhere in Norfolk. We are going to talk to him today, but disappointingly, you appear to be in your office at home, are you?
Yes, it's been like that for the past few. I don't actually know how long I've been in here, but I haven't left it for a while. So there was just no opportunity to get to a car park. I am sorry.
It's literally gone car park, office, car park, office, car park, office for about the last month.
It has, just about. But we got there in the end. Maybe normal life will resume now, he says.
Do Norwich hope normal life will resume under Dean Smith? What are they expecting?
Well, probably not, actually, because that involved a lot of Premier League defeats. So I think I think what they're hoping for now is that they have got the coach that can get more out of their current group of players. I think that's what this whole thing revolved around. I think inside the club, they've been pretty happy with how it's gone. And there's always been this air of calmness about what they're doing, which has kind of been at odds with how maybe supporters have felt has been going and some of the media frenzy around who Norwich are speaking to and people pulling out and what have you. So ultimately, they feel like they're in a good place and they feel like they've got the right person. So as always, we'll wait for some football matches to try and judge if that's the case or not.
What are they expecting from him? Why have they gone for him?
I think the really interesting thing I found is that if you had a quiet chat, I think, with the dressing room at the moment and once Daniel Farke left, they're crying out for someone who knows what good looks like in the Premier League. I feel like that maybe there isn't much Premier League experience in the staff or the players, or certainly not in terms of good Premier League experience, I suppose. And I don't know if the players maybe didn't feel like they were being told what worked or what would work, or they weren't being told it by people who knew what it looked like, and therefore maybe that just manifested in this idea that they couldn't believe it either. So I think essentially what Dean Smith does, although his record may be underwhelming to a lot of people, he has kept a team in the Premier League for a couple of seasons and got them up, and he knows what it looks like to do that, which is probably an advancement on where Norwich were. So I think instilling that belief and confidence with maybe the odd tactical tweak, because actually a lot of what Dean Smith does tie in with how Daniel Farke did things. You could see a significant improvement for not much game, but I mean, I'm relaying the theory, aren't I? I'm still sat here wondering if some of these players are genuinely good enough. So it's going to be a really fascinating first few games. I don't want to pile the pressure on early, but this is probably an appointment that needs to click pretty quickly, and Dean Smith's going to need to get to work pretty quickly.
It's quite unusual for a manager to go so quickly from one Premier League job to another, where he's not chosen to leave. So where he's essentially being sacked and then going into another club. And also when you think that Dean Smith was a Villa fan, or I presume still is a Villa fan, that must have been on a personal level pretty crushing to lose that job managing the club you love in a very, very different experience. So I'm really interested to see how he manages that challenge of coming back from that so quickly before you've really even had a chance to work out where it went wrong and what you did wrong and what you need to learn from it with a really tough job at Norwich. I mean, he's obviously had he's got a really good record in the Championship as well, I think. So he, to me, he's a smart appointment, but, you know, okay, if they can stay up, fantastic. If not, he's probably as good an option, if not the next best, to having Daniel Farker back for next season.
Are the club worried about the short turnaround from Villa to Norwich? I mean, we talked about Eddie Howe earlier and what he did with his time out, you know, and Dean Smith has said, from the age of 16, I've been working in football. In that time, I think I've had 4 months out and I didn't enjoy it. It's great to get straight back in with a club that are determined to be progressive, which is great. I don't know Dean Smith. I don't know how he works, and far be it from us to tell someone how to run their life and their career. But I had a Villa fan say to me this morning, I am surprised he hasn't just gone to Lana Beach for 3 months and relax and recharge his batteries.
That quote did make me laugh when I read it. I mean, he has gone to the States to visit his son for the first time in a couple of years. I think he hasn't seen him because of COVID. So I think that was kind of a non-negotiable for him if Norwich did want him. But I think the only point Stuart Webber was worried was when he first sort of tried to make contact with Dean. I think he expected to get he needs a break. And the fact that he didn't was interesting. I think they get the sense, they certainly get the sense that we were all talking about the loss of your dream job and things like that. But actually, to Dean Smith, perhaps, you know, it's a narrative, isn't it? He's a football manager. He has managed other teams. And I guess it's probably the same for players who play for their boyhood clubs, or, you know, it soon unravels quite quickly and becomes a job, doesn't it? So maybe there's an element of that. I feel like I'm maybe talking on his behalf a bit, but he has noticeably said how much he likes to prove people wrong. And there's probably an element with the fact that he was just binned off like that by Villa that he probably quite likes the idea of the challenge now to get stuck into it. But it must, you know, it is interesting how different managers would take on different aspects if they are out of work, whether they, you know, like to have that time, the amount of jobs that Eddie Howe sort of ruminated over. So the fact that Dean Smith's gone in, I mean, he will need to show quite a lot of energy from the off, I think, because it's going to be quite a really important week ahead of a game where Norwich would like to think they've got a good chance of winning it, and also a team that Dean Smith's already done his prep for.
Maybe also for Dean Smith, he would look at someone like Eddie Howe and think, well, he took a bit of time away from the game and the game almost forgot about him. So if you're Dean Smith, you know, he's got a good record in the Premier League. He's not got a brilliant record. You know, if he was to go and take a year off, I don't think there'd be clubs rushing to get him back 18 months down the line. So to strike, I suppose, while the iron's a bit hot, makes sense.
The one thing Norwich do is they give their managers a bit of loyalty and time. So I think if you were a football manager and Norwich came calling, you'd probably think, well, I'm going to get a bit of leeway to do something here. So even in the Premier League. So it's probably quite an appetizing job in that regard.
Was anybody else close?
Close is a difficult word to judge. I think essentially the process from the Sunday was really down to Dean Smith and Frank Lampard. They were the two they spoke to. Norwich went all the way to Dubai to speak to Frank Lampard. So to say that it wasn't, you know, an option would be a lie. But ultimately, they left Dubai to say, let's have a think and then we'll have a chat about it when we're back in the UK. Frank rang Stuart Webber and said, no, I don't want to be considered anymore. And at that point, I think Stuart Webber would have already liked it to be Dean Smith. So the question you've got then is, has Frank pulled out because he doesn't think he's getting it? Has he pulled out because he doesn't want it and thinks it's too difficult a job? There's probably only one man in the world who can answer that. So maybe he'll get asked it one day.
And when he puts his first team out in this first game, what are Norwich fans wanting to see from this team in terms of actually probably formation and personnel?
Off the back of the win at Brentford, which was obviously a red letter day for Norwich this season, they played a 4-2-3-1, which is a formation Daniel Farker played a lot last season, but hadn't really touched this year. Dean Smith has played that a fair bit, probably one that ventures between that and 4-3-3. So I don't think what Dean would do would venture too much from where Norwich are, but I think they'll want to see a better balance between looking reasonably tight, but also carrying an attacking threat, which they've been okay at times at home. So I think what they'll also want to see is a team really working for him and working hard, because they did have that certainly in the first half of Brentford. And the one thing Norwich can't afford to go from that to, you know, maybe something a bit more indifferent for a new manager immediately in front of their home fans. So give it everything they've got, see what they get. And if they do pick up a positive result, then the narrative becomes very interesting for Norwich going into the next few games.
Speak next week.
Well, I hope not. No offense. It is always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
This episode is supported by season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So Aston Villa sacked Dean Smith and replaced him with Steven Gerrard. The Villa chief executive is Christian Perslow. He's long been an admirer of Gerrard, and the Athletic's Ollie Kay has written about this alliance and joins us now. Obviously, this goes back to when Gerrard was playing at Liverpool and Perslow was the club's managing director.
Yeah, it was. So it was 2009. Christian Perslow was brought in to help find a buyer, help find investment at a time when Liverpool were in complete turmoil off the pitch under the ownership of Tom Hicks and George Gillette. The relationship at the time wasn't sort of that of somebody who was going to employ him as manager 12 years later, but they did strike up a rapport and an understanding, and they remained in touch after Christian Perslow had left the club and even after Gerrard had left the club. I'm not suggesting for one minute they were sort of on the phone every day or every week or every month. But I mentioned in the article, having been there in Miami in 2014, when England had their pre-World Cup training camp, and Christian Perslow happened to be nearby and popped in to see Gerrard after training one day. And I remember him coming over to a group of us journalists afterwards, and after this conversation he'd had with Gerrard, and he came over and said, "That guy is going to be a top manager one day." That stuck with me. Yeah, he certainly backed up that judgment by appointing him at Aston Villa.
And he also praised Rangers when they appointed Gerrard as well in 2018.
Yeah, he did. He was. I dug out an interview he did for Sky Sports at the time, Christian Perslow, where he spoke about what he thought Gerrard the person would bring to a job like that. But he also said that an appointment like that, or even just being associated with somebody like Steven Gerrard, would help put Rangers back on the map in terms of, you know, that Rangers' stock at that time was pretty low after all the turmoil they'd been through and dropping down to the divisions. They'd obviously got promoted again, but they hadn't won the league title for years. He said that in terms of reputation in Britain, reputation throughout Europe, Steven Gerrard would transform that for Rangers. And you look at it, and he really has.
Do you think Perslow, Adam, also wanted a big name for the fans?
I think certainly, you know, the Villa ownership is really ambitious, and they want to be the club that goes from being 8th, 9th, 10th to 6th, 5th, 4th over the next couple of years. You know, and I'm sure they would have thought, you know, Dean Smith doing a really good job, yeah, ideally he'll take us to that next level, but you know, when it becomes clear that he can't, we then need a coach with a slightly higher profile. So I think the name was probably attractive. Clearly, Perslow is slightly in thrall to Gerrard. And I think from Gerrard's point of view, it's very, very rare to have you know, a chief exec who regards you personally on such a level that is so invested in having you on board that it must be, you know, very, very reassuring. Because for him to take a Premier League job that wasn't Liverpool, it really had to be, I think, the right environment for Gerrard. And knowing that he's got, you know, what seems to be quite unequivocal backing from the CEO, admittedly, you know, Perzo's not the owner of Aston Villa, but clearly very high up, must have been a defining factor.
I would totally agree with what Adam said. I would also just add that after the takeover in 2018, and they sacked Steve Bruce fairly quickly after that, which seems to be a recurring theme with takeovers. At that time, they looked at Thierry Henry was possibly their first choice. We're not sure, but we know that things sort of fell into place for Dean Smith after Thierry Henry decided to join Monaco instead and take up that offer. And I think that was a blessing for Villa, because Henry didn't work out at Monaco and Dean Smith worked out brilliantly at Villa, certainly for the first 2.5 years. And yeah, I do think there's clearly an interest in getting a big name. And it might be that sort of partly about that thing of somebody bringing an aura, a reputation and putting Villa even more on the map in terms of, you know, media, brand, commercial, etc. But I don't think there's any way he would appoint Steven Gerrard in this position if Gerrard hadn't been successful at Rangers, which of course he has.
He also brings Ole an experienced coaching staff, and also a manager's staff, in inverted commas, can often stop them getting a job in the modern era because clubs won't pay for dismissing a whole load and bringing a whole load in. I mean, that's another example of the benefit of the relationship between Gerrard and Perslow, and that Gerrard can go, well, I've got to bring all of these guys with me, and Perslow goes, okay, fine.
He's been appointed as head coach at Villa. I always associate that head coach title with the very sort of hands-on training ground coaches, you know, a Brendan Rodgers type, even though, you know, whatever title he has at Leicester or Celtic or whatever, I always think of that as being your classic head coach. Gerrard seems to be, although he's a new, young manager, he seems to be more of the sort of, in some ways, old school manager. It's sort of, in some ways, new school performance director type, where he will have a big staff, and he'll appoint specialists. And Michael Beale, who does a lot of the coaching as he did at Rangers and was at Liverpool's academy with him, he's extremely highly rated as a coach and is the guy that does a lot of the coaching. Gary McAllister, obviously people will know, and it's a big coaching staff that he's brought in, big analytics and fitness coaches and one thing and another. He doesn't do a lot of the hands-on coaching himself, and that sometimes gets leveled as a criticism of coaches or managers when we think, well, what are they doing when results aren't good? But I think at Rangers, it really worked over the 3 years, particularly the third season. Gerrard is very clear about what his strengths are and how the others in that team will make his team stronger.
We've spoken about three new managers, Adam, on today's pod, in Eddie Howe and Dean Smith and Steven Gerrard. They all have different challenges, obviously. And we also very briefly, when we talked about Norwich, touched on Frank Lampard, who is now probably the example, now Eddie Howe has a job, of how difficult it is to get back in.
Yeah, another sort of name I'd say is, you know, not even just to get back in, but to get in. Look at John Terry, who, you know, left Aston Villa in the summer and hasn't managed to get a job yet. Not saying he necessarily deserves one more than anyone else, but, you know, I think there's probably a generation that are realizing they might have been special as footballers and unique and very in demand, but as coaches, there's a lot of good coaches around, and there's a lot of people around who have, you know, have put a lot of work in over several years, who are getting chances and making the most of them. And there's only, you know, there's only so many jobs that come up each year, 3 or 4 maximum. And really, those English managers, apart from obviously when Lampard got the Chelsea job, they don't tend to get those big six jobs, really. So you're then looking at, yeah, your Crystal Palaces, not Wolves, because we know where the Wolves jobs go, West Ham, that kind of Aston Villa, Norwich, and there's just not that many of them, and it's really hard. And I think Frank Lampard probably has to be a bit careful about being too picky as well, over his next job, because I think at some point he does just need to get back in.
That is probably a question of where his next job is coming from. You know, people will say, well, he wasn't up to the job at Chelsea. You know, Tuchel was an upgrade and so on. But he did a good job at Chelsea in terms of bringing all those players in, and the Reece James and Mason Mount, and putting so much faith in them, which clearly Sarri and Conte weren't going to make that investment in those young players.
But Ollie, did he do such a good job that you would look at him and think, I want him to manage my team?
I think you would have him in your thoughts if you were a mid-table Premier League club. And Palace have had him in their thoughts. Norwich have had him in their thoughts. I would expect Newcastle had him in their thoughts. It doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be first choice or second choice for those jobs. But I feel like he did a good job at Derby. He did a good job until the final month or so at Chelsea. And I think naturally he would get another job in the Premier League. But as you say, there aren't that many jobs that come up. You know, there aren't that many clubs which are both gettable and desirable. You might say Watford's gettable, but you know, you're not going to get much time at Watford. Newcastle obviously looks like a really good job now in some ways, but I mean, Newcastle the last few years hasn't been a desirable job at all, and it's, we look at probably
there's also jobs that just don't come up, right? You know, Southampton, Burnley, West Ham's not going to come up for a long time. Not that Frank Lampard would be going there, I can't imagine. But you know, there's probably five or six.
But interestingly, you say you can't be too picky. I think a lot of managers say you have to be picky. Otherwise, if you don't get it right, I mean, if you go into a club with terrible owners or no money or this, that, and the other, a whole variety of different things that could go wrong, you're just going to do even more damage to your reputation.
Yeah, that's why I said too picky rather than picky.
Good out. Well done.
I mean, if you look at, you know, say the 10 biggest clubs in the Championship, a lot of those big Championship clubs which would in theory be really good jobs aren't good jobs because the clubs are unstable, or there's something sort of rotten and stale within the clubs that, you know, is going to take years to sort out. You know, Steve Cooper has gone into Forest and seems to be doing a really good job, but you look at how many good, decent managers have gone into Forest and Sheffield Wednesday and Birmingham and Sunderland over the years and just struggled because it's impossible. You know, those clubs have looked unmanageable. So the number of jobs which are both gettable and desirable is really small. And then you've got, you know, probably dozens of really good, well-qualified managers looking at them for that very reason. So it is difficult.
And he doesn't need to do it. I mean, that's the thing for this generation of players. They don't need to go and work with, you know, with a mad owner in the Championship just because the offer's there. They don't need to do it financially in the way that maybe a generation that came before might think, well, I don't really, really need, but God, that would be really nice. And it would help with Lampard. I'm pretty sure, unless he's made mistakes we're not aware of, that he'll be absolutely fine. So it is a case of, you know, will I enjoy this more than anything? You know, and also what, then the other challenge of how do I spend my time if I'm not doing this, which probably the more difficult psychological challenge for a generation of players that is coming out with all the money in the world, but also all the time in the world.
But he was at Derby and that was a good season. And they were a top 16 throughout and got into the playoffs and lost in the playoff final. He was at Chelsea for a season where they were under difficult circumstances. He got them into the top four. The first 2-3 months of the following season, they were top or near the top of the league. They were certainly top about 6 weeks before he was sacked. And it's only like the final 6 weeks or so of that spell at Chelsea where he would have thought, God, well, he might have thought, might not have thought, but where he seemed to be really struggling. So I would imagine having had mostly really good experiences as a manager, mostly doing well, mostly thinking he's, you know, doing a decent job, he will be desperate to get back into it. But I mean, I keep sort of seeing that ruled himself out of contention for Norwich, ruled himself out of contention for Crystal Palace in the summer. I mean, I never know sort of who's ruling who out first, really, in some of these situations. But it's, yeah, I think he would look at it as something as, yeah, he might not need to do, but he really wants to do. And I think that's a good thing. But yeah, as you said, you can't afford to be too picky, but there are yeah, you've got to choose that next job carefully, because I think if he'd gone to Norwich and been relegated, I think people would be less forgiving of it, less understanding of it than they might be with Dean Smith.
We will leave it there. Ollie, Adam, thank you.
Great. All right. Cheers. Bye.
Cheers, guys. See you soon.
That's it. Thanks very much for listening. To read all the articles we have discussed today, Adam in particular, head to theathletic.com/footballpod for a 33% discount off the price of an annual subscription. And I'm back on Thursday for the Business of Sport with Matt Slater.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.